This is Danielle Robay from Bookmarked by Reese's Book Club. A new car is kind of like a new book. It takes you places you never thought you could go. What will you drive into the next chapter of your life? It's fun to dream about your next car, but when you're done dreaming, you need to head to Cars.com. Cars.com has the tools and expert advice to help you find your dream car. Their advanced search filters allow you to explore 2 million new and used cars so that you can find the perfect car. Start your search with Cars.com. Where to next?
Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
I want a Melania press conference so bad. That's all. I just want another one.
Yeah? You want another one where she talks about...
I did not work with Mr. Epstein. I just want another one.
I do not know who this human printer is. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Next Level. I'm JVL here with my best friend, Tim Miller, and sitting in for my other best friend, Andrew Egger, author of the Morning Shots newsletter. We will be back with all three of us again for real, probably next week.
Where is Sarah? Is there like a log rolling competition happening or something?
God. You leave her and her fingerless gloves alone. Big news, the tickets for our fall tour in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Atlanta are open for pre-sale. Only to Bulwark Plus members. So go over to thebulwark.com/events. And if you are a Bulwark Plus member, you can get your tickets right away. If you are a YouTube Premium member, go to the membership tab on our channel page and you can get your tickets that way. I hope you guys all come hang with us. All right. So we got kind of a weird show. We're going to hop around, do a lot of different things. Not going to lie. I tell you guys when the shows are good and when it's not. This is really a medium show. This is
even though you said that last week and all the commenters graded us A and B.
Yeah.
And even though you graded us
great
C.
Inflation. Great inflation. We are going to start with a piece from the New York Times on Sunday about a couple from California, a gentleman named Brent Jindra, an Ohio native.
Am I going to like Brent at the end of the story, do you think?
Oh, I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. Because you care a lot about immigration and the abuses of ICE. And Brent and his family are a victim of that.
Okay, great.
Okay. So last year, Brent met a lady late in, not late in life, but he's like a middle-aged fellow. He's 48. And they fell in love. Her name is Galina Bobraneva. She's Russian. And she had come to America as a tourist in 2021 and just loved it, thought it was great. She renewed her visa a couple times and extended it. And then in 2022, she applied for asylum. This is Joe Biden's America. And everything was fine. And she was treated very well by the American government. And they met in 2025 and they just fell in love. Those two crazy kids. They just decided, why wait? Let's go for it. It's a great story, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, in July, the two of them were flying from San Francisco to Burbank. And when they landed, they were approached by a gentleman who said, congratulations, you've been selected for secondary screening, ma'am.
And it doesn't usually happen on landing.
Not on landing, no. And they brought her to a private room and they handcuffed her. And he was from ICE.
And handcuffed her, probably. Was both?
She was arrested and detained. She spent a night on the floor of an LA jail cell and then was moved at like literally in the dead of night to a detention camp. Let's just call it an internment camp in the Mojave Desert. And, arrives there at 5 o'clock in the morning. She is shackled at the hands, the waist, and the feet. Mm. And they insist that she is an illegal immigrant, and they're going after her. And this New York Times is a story about their ordeal. And she's kept in what sound like terrible conditions in the internment camp. She complains about there being 120 female prisoners in this little space with only 7 showers, only 4 of which were working. So it's very hard to get potable water. Medical care was denied until people required hospitalization. It all sounds very bad, Tim. And yeah.
Was she like a violent criminal of some kind? Was she plotting with Putin? Was there like national security issues at play here? Was she a thief, petty thief?
The Department of Homeland Security says that she did not have status, and that, you know, simply having a pending application for a green card, which is what she had, does not confer legal status. And so that's they insist that she was here illegally. Some details. Andrew, her husband, Brent, did vote for Donald Trump 3 times. He tells the New York Times that a big part of his attraction to Trump was the immigration agenda.
Yeah.
Now,
because now the wife, I'm just kind of going over this one more time ahead. I'm processing all the details in real time.
Yeah.
White lady, right?
Russian. Well, she's Russian. Yes.
White Russian lady. Yeah. So, you know, in your head, if you're Brent voting for Donald Trump the 3rd time, after the insurrection with the mass deportations now sign while you're in love. Well, I guess maybe he hadn't met her yet. But you're not really imagining a Russian lady in your mind, you know, as the person that's going to be shackled in the internment camp. You're kind of picturing like a Guatemalan.
Listen, hold on, Andrew. Hold on. You're going to have your turn, Andrew. Here is, again, I really struggle because I don't like Dark JVL. Dark JVL is bad. We want him in his GIMP box. We want good JVL. Good JVL had trouble with this because here are some things from Brent in the course of his conversations with interviewers and reporters in the New York Times. A U.S. citizen just watched his wife get dragged away and had no idea where she's going, Brent told the Times. Would it have been any better if Brent hadn't been a U.S. citizen himself? We are living in fear in my own country, he said. Here's more Brent. The allure of the MAGA campaign was around illegal entries of criminals, said Mr. Jindra, 48. There was never a mandate for this president to turn the barrel of the gun and start going after people who legally entered. Again, I will remind people that Donald Trump said he was going to deport 20 million people, and there were at absolute most 15 million people of any sort of undocumented status in America.
It's interesting that we're slicing it a little thin there. I like how he said we didn't go after people who entered legally.
Yes.
So like becoming illegal, if you enter legally and then you're illegal, that's kind of a different kettle of fish than entering illegally.
Here's where good JVL is really struggling to come out into the light. She did not jump a wall. She did not swim a river, he said. She came in Trump's beautiful big front door. Gentlemen, I turn it over to you.
If I wanted to give a piece of advice to some of these guys, the amazing thing to me about these stories is how they always come in with this mentality like, look, this is the kind of thing that could have happened to anybody. Like they plainly think that they deserve a little bit of sympathy in this and they're just ready to get these grievances off of their chest. And maybe that's true, like among their sort of social caste. Maybe they're going around like to their other MAGA friends and they're like, man, I just never really thought this would happen this way to me. I don't know. I think if I'm this guy and a New York Times reporter comes knocking at my door and is like, unburden yourself to me, come cry on my shoulder about all of this, I'm not going to do all that dialogue about how, you know, my wife was one of the good kind of illegal immigrants, you know, like it's just, you're just setting yourself up for more indignities on top of the ones you're already going through, buddy.
Tim, can you help? Good JV.
I fucking hate this guy. Okay. Like, I hate this guy. And I got to tell
not
you.
Not what I was hoping for. Go ahead.
Sorry. I'm trying. Like, you know, we're on with Andrew today, who's even like a nicer version of Sarah. Okay. You know, like I've got the Catholic guilt. It's happening inside of me. I want to have charity in my heart. And I don't want to be like the little man inside of me right now that's like, enjoy that floor. Like, there is a little man inside of me that's like, enjoy that floor for the Russian lady. And that's bad. That's wrong. And I'm fighting that. And I don't
losing?
Want to be, I
Are
don't
you losing?
Want to be that person. I'm losing the fight. Yeah. I don't want to be the that person though. Not that it really matters except for to myself and to my own integrity, which I'm trying to, you know, keep up with. You know, man, like there are so many people that are suffering because of Trump getting in, and that are suffering like this guy's wife. And I guess maybe a nicer way to put it, as to Andrew's point, is what I would like to hear from somebody who's in this situation, who has a New York Times reporter call, is I'm sorry. And like, I feel horrible for all of the other families that are going through this. And what I'm getting from him is, well, like, I don't know. Seems like this would have been cool if the person came across the Rio Grande. And it's kind of like, why? You know, like there are so many people, and, you know, I did a whole video this week about, you know, this family from Venezuela, that they did everything right. Like literally everything. Like they came and asked for asylum from Venezuela when that was allowed because of the horrible things happening in Venezuela when Biden was allowing people in. Like, you can say you don't like Biden's policies, but like they followed the rule. Like they came and asked for asylum when that was allowed. Then they got here and they showed up for appointments. They you know, showed up to the ICE office. Kept checking in. They worked. They didn't break any laws. Their kid went to school. They're learning English. Like, they're doing the things you're supposed to do. And then when Trump said, no, the rules have changed, you have to go home, they signed up to self-deport. And like, we put them in the fucking internment camp anyway. They've been there for 6 weeks at the time of this taping. Like, so like, they did literally everything right at every step of the way. And like, these fucking ghouls are sending them to hell. And it's like, that's horrible for these people. And like, that is what the promise of the Trump administration was. And so it's like, for somebody to have voted for him three times and to be like, well, the Rio Grande people deserved it. It's like, no, not really, actually. I mean, sure, like there are some violent criminals out there that came in many different ways, including overstaying their travel visa, right? It's not like only the good people flew in on a travel visa and stayed. Like, how do you think the 9/11 bombers got here? Wasn't swimming across the Rio Grande. Okay, so... you know, like that part makes me really upset at him, and I don't really want to take it out on his wife, because like nobody should be treated like this. But that's how we're treating people.
Can I put just a real finer point on that too? Because the difference he's trying to sketch out between, you know, well, she was here legally before, and it's just like, you know, it's just a matter of that having run out and her trying to get a new legal status. I mean, she is significantly more illegally here than many of the people that Trump demonized as people who need to be out of the country right now. I mean, there were whole categories of legal immigrants during the campaign. If you'll remember, in 2024, Haitians in Springfield, Ohio, who were here on temporary protected status, legally in the country, legally allowed to work, legally allowed to live out their lives here. Meanwhile, this guy's own wife is currently an illegal immigrant trying to get to the legal status that these people already have. And he sat through all that. He sat through, they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats, we have to get them all out of here. And at no point in his mind did an alarm bell go off, like, well, maybe, like, what's the difference? What is the difference if even these people who are legally present are swept up into it, but my wife is safe? I mean, I guess you could say that Trump won't do this to white people, and there is a good amount of reason to be confident that you know, Trump would do this less to white people, like his refugee policies and the way that those are the only ones we let in anymore. But yeah, I mean, it's really astonishing on every level.
And this is obvious from my content recently, but I'm really apoplectic about the camps, and I struggle. I guess I want, it's always, you know, sort of hard to like pin down. Like, it's not like we're using data whenever we say something like this. Like, why isn't there more outrage? Like, where's the outrage? Like, it's always kind of based on your perception and what you're saying in your algorithm. And so, you know, sometimes it's hard to actually judge, but I don't know. I felt like there was like very extensive pushback to the child separation thing in the first term, like up to and including like churches, like evangelical churches, even, right? Like, there were like parts of the right, you know, broadly, like not a ton in Washington, but like parts of the right broadly who were like saying, no, like this is not how things should be, and like and pushing back on this. And I, you know, so there is some of this. I don't want to dismiss any of this. And there are people protesting outside Dilley, and there are people that are showing up, but like the camp, like anytime you read any story from any person who's been in one of these camps, it's like unimaginably awful.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there have been many now, and like the blitz are on before I went on vacation. You know, you talk about the stuff now from Dilley. We've seen multiple reports recently, and it's like in the New Jersey ICE facility, there are protests out there every day. So it's not, again, like it's not, there's nobody, but like it would seem like this would be a beyond the pale thing that like people would look at this time story and be like, wow, like a MAGA guy's wife is like on the ground and unable to shower herself, and a pregnant lady's not able to get medical treatment. But it does. I don't know. Is that wrong?
No, I think it's right. So here's what I struggle with. Maybe you boys can help me before we move on from this. I mean, obviously in a perfect world, I would have liked for Brent to understand what Trump meant and what deporting 20 million people would look like when he voted for him. Okay. But you know, you don't live in a perfect world. People have different amounts of information. They have different decision matrices. I understand that. Ideally, then, when he saw what mass deportation meant, which is a thing we've seen over the last 18 months now, with, you know, with CECOT and thousands, tens of thousands of news stories about the accounts of how people are being treated, he would have said, oh, this is really bad. We shouldn't do this. He doesn't seem to have thought that. It was only after his wife got snatched by ICE that he thought, I can't believe this.
Correct.
And this is what gets me. I think at a bare minimum, your moral obligation when finally confronted with the hideous reality of this evil should be to say, holy shit, I'm well-to-do. We have a lawyer. We're able to pay thousands of dollars to get her out on bond and to fight this because she now has an ankle monitor and whatever. I can't imagine how bad this is for the people who don't have my resources.
Right.
And there does not seem to be any of that. Instead, we seem to get, I mean, I'm an American citizen. I shouldn't have this. It's not like she came in over the river. I want to just read you one last little bit.
Great.
This is from the very end of the piece. Over dinner at a seafood restaurant in Redwood City the night before her appointment, Mrs. Bobrnaeva barely touched her crab cakes. She had been struggling to sleep and was terrified of being detained again. It seems to me like if you are privileged to have the resources to fight these things, that you can sit in a seafood restaurant and have crab cakes that you don't eat, then part of your duty is to think about those less fortunate than you and to be able to imagine, now that you yourself have confronted the reality of this, what the reality of this looks like to for people with less resources. That's all. Maybe Brent will get there.
Yeah.
Can I say one thing that I'm sort of personally convicted by in all of this story, especially listening to you talk a minute ago, Tim, about just the way this is all so ongoing and it's still such an ordeal for so many people. And I think like all last year, I mean, we all spent a lot of time covering this story, the mass deportation story, the immigration story. I know I did in the newsletter. And a lot of that was in large part because the White House was leaning into all of this. Like it thought this stuff was so cool and it thought it was so based. And it really was just putting out just constant
alligator Alcatraz.
The ASMR stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like they were really leaning into it messaging wise. And that made it really easy to keep your eye on the story. And because, and then after Minneapolis, they suddenly figured out, oh, this sucks for us politically. This is actually turning every normie in America off with how grotesque and cruel it is. And we're just going to get way quieter about it from now on. And we're going to go into primarily redder areas where local governments will cooperate more, and we're going to do our sweeps there, and we're going to stop doing all that just horrible grotesquery. And ever since, like I know I personally, I've just spent a lot less time covering the immigration, covering the detention stuff. I mean, there's been a lot of other stuff going on, but like they have managed to sweep it under the rug so much more this year just by turning off the cameras and turning off the ASMR reels. And
let me give you a silver lining on this, and then we have to move on. It may be true that, as you're saying, they have hidden some of this stuff away. But maybe the Trump administration has backed itself into a sour spot because polling seems to indicate people are still, the normies still don't like the immigration stuff. And as we heard on Sarah's focus group last week, when she sat down with a bunch of MAGA voters, there were a couple MAGA voters who were really upset that Trump isn't deporting enough people. So maybe he's losing the support.
Start with the Russian lady. I guess this is where I come back to. I bet Brent would love Moscow. I mean, he voted for Trump 3 times, or he's on Russia's side in every election. I bet, I don't know. And maybe not even Moscow, maybe further out. I don't, you know, they had the Sochi Olympics. I bet there's some nice hamlets for them in Sochi. And
Siberia is nice this time of year.
Yeah, they can maybe move there.
All right, we got to go on. Tim, you got a word from our sponsor first.
This segment is sponsored literally by the New York Times. We kind of didn't mean to do it like that, actually. We were going to flip around the show, but sometimes you just get synergies in the world. Sometimes in the corporate content space, you get synergies. And we found one right now. We've been talking about really the moving story of Brent and his Russian bride and their treatment by ICE. And you need these kind of stories in order to paint a picture for what's really happening in Trump's America. You need well-reported stories. You need reporters to go out there in the field to deal with these people, to meet these people, to go to Redwood City and sit and watch them not eat their crab cakes and share that with the rest of us. Like, how do we have this content? You know, how can we provide you the commentary and analysis that you need to be able to contextualize what's happening in the news if we don't have people like our colleague Adrian and like all the great New York Times reporters that are out there doing this work in the field? It's hard to get good information these days. New York Times reporters are some of the best ones doing it. And, you know, by the way, speaking of New York Times stories, we're going to be talking about in a minute. Another thing, what did Maggie Haberman and Jonathan Swan bring us? The Natalie Hart MASH notes. We wouldn't know about the love notes that the human printer is sending to Donald Trump without the New York Times. So, look, we have our nitpicks for complaints sometimes, things happening everywhere, but you need good reporting. You need fact-based reporting. And we need to support the journalists doing that, whether that's here at the Bulwark of the New York Times, locally, or anywhere else. Wherever you seek it out, nationally, locally, support fact-based reporting. Thank you to the New York Times.
All right, Tim, you were going to do a little dramatic reading for us because we have had the conscience of MAGA land shocked over the last 24 hours by some of the most vile remarks I've ever heard in American politics from Senator John Ossoff.
Yeah, me and Eggs talked about this yesterday on the Daily Podcast. And we talked about just kind of the substance of what John Ossoff was doing and his strategy, because he's giving these speeches. He's got the hero shot, very on message, focused on Donald Trump's corruption and how he's caring about himself and not regular people. And he offers, amidst kind of the litany of things that Donald Trump is doing to demonstrate that he cares about himself only and not about the forgotten man, he has a line where he talks about how he likes to travel around with Natalie. He kind of moves on, discusses the other thing that Trump's like to do, the golf courses. He likes to golf. He likes to nap. You know, he likes to decorate. And he likes to hang out with Natalie. And it's just kind of like a list of things Trump likes to do. Like, sorry, like this is what Donald Trump likes to do.
It does seem to be true.
It does seem to be true. So he lists them off. Many on the right, though, I should have worn my pearls. They clutched their pearls would be an understatement. I mean, they had the death grip upon their pearls over this. Mm. How could John Ossoff treat a young woman like this to imply that she was having an affair with Trump? Did he imply that exactly? I guess, I don't know. He said he liked to travel with her. Does he not like to travel with her? Did he not put her in the cratering truck?
Interesting that their mind went there.
It was interesting their mind went there, but they all were in unison. How could you? You called her a whore, one guy said. And it's like, did he call her a whore? I don't know. You seem to be thinking that. And, I mean, Donald Trump over the years, whether it be Quiet Piggy, you're bleeding out the whatever. I mean, Donald Trump has accused so many people of, like, his wives and and staffers of being ugly and having affairs that, like, all of us even had a colleague Donald Trump accused falsely of having an affair with a political, with a politician, with Ted, when he did so with Ted Cruz in the first campaign. So, you know, people that have gone along with Trump, you'd think that they'd be able to kind of handle a little line like that, given Trump's proclivities for sexist jokes. But no.
Or sexual assault.
And sexual assault.
I mean, you know.
You'd think that if they'd swore Donald Trump three times like Brent, you know, that they'd be like kind of comfortable with some locker room talk. But no, you'd be wrong. I'm going to read to you some of the comments about John Ossoff's Natalie Harp remark. Ari Fleischer. I never really knew what to think about Ossoff. Now I see he's a bottom feeder. Who does this and holds their head high? Who accuses women of behaving like that because he doesn't like their boss? He should be ashamed. Megyn Kelly. She said this while bleeding out of her wherever. Ossoff was clearly implying that Trump was having an affair with his staffer. He was so determined to disparage Trump, he didn't give one thought to how this would affect Natalie forever. Don't let the Democrats tell you they're for women. It is a lie. Scott Jennings, this is quite a message for the Democratic Party to send to young women working in politics. Pretty ugly stuff. Julie Kelly, this is more of a point of personal privilege. Julie Kelly said, shame on him. What a vile thing to suggest. God forbid that a young, attractive woman works her butt off every single day for the president. I'm shocked Ossoff said this. I thought he was better than this, especially as a father of two daughters. I guess not. Julie Kelly, who wrote for American Greatness, you might remember, once said of David French's wife, she screwed around with her preacher when she was a teen. She was a victim of sexual assault, and that's what Julie Kelly said. So anyway, you would think that Julie Kelly might just become comfortable with these sort of texts. No, we'll keep going. Michael Knowles, every time I see a woman at work, I just know she's sleeping with her boss. Am I right? Am I right? Am I the new Obama yet? That's him making fun of Ossoff. Any other good ones here? Mercedes Schlapp. Let's talk about Mercy. I don't think any woman would want to travel with Ossoff. Well, I don't think any boy would want to travel with your husband. Anyway, we'll leave it there. There are more. I mean, do we have to do this? I guess I wanted to go through all this. It's like, this is our future? These people pretending to be offended about things? Andrew?
No, yeah. I mean, that's the main point of it all. It's just to try to drag everything down to a your side does it too, your side does it too, you know, get rid of any possible comparisons to what's happening. I mean, like, what do you even say about it? Ossoff did not mention Natalie as an agent here. He just said Trump likes to travel with her, which is obviously true. The idea that he is denigrating her character any more than like any of the pieces of reporting that have come out about how sort of slavishly devoted she is to this guy and how she, you know, just spends her entire life in this sort of state of high adulation toward the president that she works for. I don't really get why that would be any more salacious than any of that stuff. But I mean, Ossoff is a guy who is seen as, like we were talking about yesterday, seen as potentially a front runner for the 2028 nomination. He's the kind of guy, if you're going to be able to stick in a knife and start dinging away at him now, you're going to do it. And so I think that's motivating a lot of this too.
In my mind, I've never seen Natalie Harp, but I picture her as Kitty from Arrested Development being obsessed with George Sr. That's my mental image for this relationship. Maybe true, maybe not. Who can say?
What though, JVL? I mean, how are we supposed to live in a world where, like, this is what we have to deal with for the future? Like, these people... I would have thought that, like, one of the things that we had at least gotten out of this hell, like, for a decade, we've had to live through this fucking hell of the stupidest, most disgusting, most irredeemable person in the country being president of the United States twice. We've had to live through this. And I thought that after 12 years, like, maybe the one little silver lining would be that going forward, we don't have to listen to Republicans be like, oh, I'm going to lecture you about your minor flaws. Like, I thought that was going to be the nice thing. We could just move on. You know, some people lamented this, you know, that in the future we'd have no standards anymore. I was celebrating that we'd be able to just move forward and, like, we wouldn't have to do the fake pearl clutching nonsense anymore. We'd be free of that because no one could possibly buy a single moral quibble from a Republican for a generation. You know, maybe in 2040, they could do it again. But unfortunately, it seems like that's not the case.
Here's a genuine question about this. This was such a little storm that it feels like it must have been coordinated, right? I mean, somebody must have said, the boss really doesn't like this. Somebody showed it to him. Go out and punch back against this, because everybody came out and said the same thing. And, like, I guess it's possible that all of elite MAGA was genuinely affronted by this thing that Ossoff said at a campaign speech, but I kind of doubt it. And so, who is this for? It was clearly for Trump, right?
I think there are two things. Andrew hit the first one. It's this, you want to alibi yourself, right? Like, if you want to create this world where they're all bad guys. It's like, it's the old Trump line. Like, oh, like, we're so, you know, what was his line?
We're so innocent.
We're so innocent, right? Like, it's this, you want to just muddy everyone. And so you don't have to have any accountability for your flaws. So, like, if you take it to 11 anytime any Democrat does anything, then you alibi yourself. So I think that's part of it. And I do think, does that work? I think that does work on some people. You know, you get some percentage of people just throw up their hands and be like, fuck them all. A pox on both their houses. You know, everybody's corrupt. And that allows you to get away with stuff. And then also there's the extra thing, which is, I do think, and maybe we should do this on the other side of the ad. I do think that some of this is for Trump, because Mrs. Trump might not like these stories that much.
All right, we'll talk about that in a minute. This show is sponsored by Laundry Sauce. Your laundry should not smell like the stuff you use to disinfect your bathroom. And thankfully, Laundry Sauce smells much better than that. Regular listeners of this show know that I love my Laundry Sauce so much that I legit keep my stash hidden from the rest of my family so that they do not get to have the Laundry Sauce on their clothes and I get to have it on mine. Hand to God, this is true. Yesterday, I was doing laundry and I felt like my kids needed a little pick-me-up. And so I used a Laundry Sauce pod on theirs as an act of love to them. This is how life actually functions in my household.
This is what you're wanting from Brent. This kind of selflessness.
Basically, yes. Laundry Sauce isn't just about smelling incredible. It's engineered for performance. These highly concentrated pods are packed with the cleaning power of bioenzymes that obliterate stains from muddy hikes, backyard barbecues, and the inevitable iced coffee spill. Summer is the perfect time to feel your best, and Laundry Sauce is here to help make your favorite pieces look and feel brand new. Again, none of this is me being a shill. It really is just that great. I love it so much, and it makes me feel better. And I can tell, I know the difference when I've used Laundry Sauce versus whether I have done a load without it. And I hate doing like normal detergents anymore. Laundry Sauce just made its Target debut. You can shop Laundry Sauce in select Target stores now. 90% of customers now love Laundry Day because of Laundry Sauce. So turn your least favorite chore into a self-care ritual. Again, legit how I think of it. For a limited time only, our listeners get 20% off your entire order when you use code THENEXTLEVEL at laundrysauce.com. That's 20% off your order at laundrysauce.com with promo code THENEXTLEVEL. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to make Laundry Day the best day of the week.
I want a Melania press conference so bad. That's all. I just want another one.
Yeah? You want another one?
I did not work with Mr. Epstein. I just want another one.
I do not know who this human printer is. All right. So we've got stuff going on. We've got a new a new White House press secretary coming in soon, Andrew. And my girl, Marjorie Taylor Greene, has suggested Scott Jennings for the job. Here's MTG. Scott Jennings should be the next press secretary. He worked for Bush Jr. during the fake weapons of mass destruction Iraq war. He's been Mitch McConnell's top consultant for years, working to make sure old geriatric rhino Mitch stays in power. Scott Jennings is the perfect mouthpiece for new MAGA, which is now a neocon war admin that spends trillions too much and serves the Epstein class and corporate donors. Mic drop.
Andrew.
Tell me the lie, Andrew.
Is Trump starting to become appealing to you first, though, as a as a neocon corporate administration?
Everybody always accuses me of being a neocon. I don't know where they get this stuff. I don't know where it comes from. I think Scott Jennings would make a very poor press secretary. I do not think he has the juice. I think he is too flappable. I think people get under his skin far too easily. People do not give Carolyn Leavitt enough credit, honestly. Like, I know that she is a mouthpiece for this horrible administration.
I think you don't hear that much all the time. The Bulwark.
What's that?
You don't hear that take that much on the Bulwark. So that's good. We like to keep people on their toes.
Here's the thing. Like, did a lot of bad stuff, lied all the time on behalf of the president. Nuts and bolts of how she did the job, I think she was an astonishingly good press secretary for what Trump needs, which is like he almost doesn't want somebody who's going to be in there getting mad at the media all the time. That's like a Trump 1.0 thing where it's like the media is the establishment and you need Sean Spicer or Sarah Huckabee Sanders to go in there and like really fight with them. Trump 2.0 is all about projecting this attitude of like supreme, like disdainful nonchalance toward the media. And I feel like, you know, the president can't always succeed in doing that. But Carolyn Leavitt was great at that. She always was sort of unflappable. She was, you know, cheery and sort of chirped out her put downs of the media. And she stuck to her points really well. And I just think like he is going to have trouble finding another person who did any of that as well as Carolyn did.
Can't wait for her to be a political analyst for CBS News.
Can we talk about the underlying point MTG was making? Because I think that there's a question here, which kind of gets at the heart of the Tucker Carlson MTG political project, and kind of gets at the heart of questions about what happens next with MAGA, which is like, what stuff do MAGA voters actually care about? Like, what do they actually care about, right? Like, you know, we aren't able to do kind of scientific experiments over and over again, which is like Trump, but he's a warmonger, right? Or it's like Trump, but he did want to cut Social Security a lot, right? Like, whatever, like, you know, all these different things. And so, like, we make assumptions and we're kind of getting this time now, which is like Trump really is doing a lot of stuff that he didn't promise, right? And so we're seeing our people. Like, if you look at the polls, it's like the MAGA Republicans are still his top supporters, right? Like the mm-hmm. And he's at a very low ebb in the polls. But people who say I'm not just a Republican, but a MAGA Republican, they still overwhelmingly support it. And so, you know, is this like neocon slur? I guess my question is the America First side's neocon attack, which they think, I think, is very promising for their like pincer attack to take over the party. Like, does that matter? Or is that kind of like when the Tea Party people thought that the voters really cared about cutting spending and they were using that as an attack against the establishment? It turned out it's kind of like, not really. Like most of these voters were Team Jersey stuff, and like MTG is going to be kind of screaming into the wind, and like the fucking cultists are going to go along with whatever Trump wants, and if he wants to pick Marco next, he'll go with neocon Marco and it'll be fine. Like, where do you kind of fall on that question?
I think that it is unlikely that, you know, the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world and the Tucker Carlsons of the world or whatever are going to be able to, you know, stage some sort of hostile takeover the way that Donald Trump did a decade ago and wrest the party from his hands and, you know, get their own new thing rolling in there. That is not the only way for them to win, though, right? I think that when you look at just demographics in the Republican Party, there is a giant, vast middle of the party of the GOP that's just sort of unthinkingly and not too complicatedly pro-Trump, pro-MAGA, anti-Democrat, anti-elites. You know, they are going to go whichever way with Trump on this question. I think that younger Republicans, in particular, like the people who kind of came up imbibing who don't have any recollection of the pre-Trump days, are a different class of people. I think that they genuinely believe a lot of the rhetoric of about the anti-neocon stuff, I mean, the anti-Israel stuff. They are big fans of Marjorie Taylor Greene. They're big fans of Donald Trump. They care about the Epstein stuff. Big fans of Tucker Carlson, I meant to say. And I think that, you know, these people have a large platform. That large platform is not going away. They have a beachhead in the Republican Party. And even though they are not, you know, going to go out there and beat a chosen Trump primary successor in 2028 or something like that, I think that their influence is only going to continue to grow because, you know, old Trump Republicans will be aging out of the coalition and all these new kids are going to start aging into it. So I don't know how quickly the balance of power tips or even whether it fully tips. We could have, you know, different developments later. But I think it's a just because they're not going to necessarily throw Trump out in his ear in 2 years doesn't mean that this is not increasingly a force to reckon with in the GOP.
So, Tim, I think this is a tactical play, which is that you got to find a way to attack Trump that doesn't require his voters to say that Trump was bad. And that's what the neocon stuff is, because it's really a, look, Trump was great, but, you know, Netanyahu and some of those other people from over there, they're the ones who turned him around and made this happen, right? And so it lets you construct a universe in which Trump is good. You don't have to say that Trump was bad, but he just got stabbed in the back by the Jews or something like that. That's what I think this is basically about. No?
Yeah. No, it's a tactical play. It's just an interesting one. Yeah. You know, I just wanted to kind of mull it over because, like, this has been subtext with a lot of people, but because most people in this America First side still want to be on Trump's good side, and MTG is like a fully free bird, like it gives her the opportunity to make this kind of tactical argument in a very textual, plain text way, which is like, not only is Trump whatever, like, you know, it's not only that the party or that they're like Trump's advisors have been, you know, that's what Tucker does, right? Like the advisors have been, you know, tricking him, you know, into going along with the deep state neocon wants. It's like MTG is saying, no, like Trump is that thing you didn't like when you went with Trump. Like Trump became the Mitch McConnell wing of the party. And that's just an interesting argument.
I want to just take a quick aside here from my girl, Marjorie, because I will say that Marjorie, when she left MAGA, one of the things she said was, she was like, all of this tone stuff is wrong and we're all being terrible to each other and I did it too and I really regret my part in it and I'm not going to do that anymore. This is a very civil attack on Scott Jennings. And this is not done in sort of Groiper. Yeah, this is not done in a Groiper style, I'm going to shock people. It's actually like a substantive and polite critique. I just want to say she's modeling the good. She's modeling the good, and I really appreciate that from her.
Edgar, close your ears. Here's the other thing about MTG. Comparatively, in her post-Congress life, she is getting married. She seems to be processing everything very healthily. Meanwhile, things aren't going sort of great for Nancy Mace and Lauren Boebert, you know? So something to be said for that also, kind of a personal victory.
Yeah, I just, you know, you love to see it, my girl Marjorie. I still want to sit down with her. I want to go out to Outback Steakhouse with her. I feel like that's
have you made it? Have you made a formal pitch?
I haven't.
I think you should make a formal pitch.
Maybe. I don't know.
I can ask Robert Draper to connect you. We could get Robert Draper to connect you. I'm sure.
Maybe we will.
Speaking of the New York Times, sponsored by the New York Times, Robert Draper's on great reporting on Marjorie Taylor Greene for many years now.
The next time Tucker puts out one of those pictures from his hunting lodge in Maine with all the people around the table, we're like, it's JVL. He's right there.
With my people. All right. We're going to talk a little bit about Pete Hegseth running for president and the Florida primary, which is today, in a minute. Andrew, first a message from you.
Oh, yeah. This show is sponsored by Upwork. In a world where AI is changing every role and every industry, knowing who actually has deep expertise matters more than ever. Upwork connects you with highly skilled freelance professionals with proven track records so you can hire with confidence. Upwork gives your business fast access to highly skilled specialists with deep expertise so you can fill critical skill gaps, launch projects faster, and scale support up or down without committing to full-time headcount. You can browse profiles, review past work, and get help scoping the role so you can hire with confidence and get started quickly. With Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork. AI-powered shortlisting delivers a curated shortlist of top freelancers matched to your goals in under 6 hours, no endless searching required. Upwork also cuts down operational hassle by handling things like contracts and payments in one place so you can spend more time running the business. Thousands of growing businesses already trust Upwork to hire highly skilled freelance professionals for everything from one-off projects to ongoing support. With over 170,000 freelancers holding 5-star ratings, you can hire with the confidence that comes from hiring someone with a verified track record. It's free to sign up and posting a job is easy. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. You know how to spell Upwork. Upwork.com.
Florida primary is today, and Byron Donalds looking like he is likely to get through the Republican primary for governor. He has Trump's endorsement. He probably winds up facing former Republican David Jolly running as Democrat. Your guy, Tim. Is it too much to think maybe Jolly has a chance?
I think David Jolly's a chance. I think the Senate race is tougher. I think it's always important to be on the field. So I don't want to discourage anyone on the Vindman team. He's in a primary. I expect Vindman will win tonight. Another friend of the show, a hero that I like a lot. I do think that Senate races just polarize a lot more. The governor's races, you see this in the data, you see it in the focus groups. And I think in particular, this governor's race, you got a couple things going for you if you're David Jolly, if you're looking for crossover votes. You know, one, his brand is independent. I know they're going to try to turn him into whatever, Never Trump Kamala on the ads, and that will like have some success with some percentage of the voters. But like, he's an independent-minded guy. He like doesn't seem like a scary woke lib. And he seems like the kind of guy that you'd probably want running something in your neighborhood. You'd want kind of running the bake sale at your school. Do you want Byron Donalds running the bake sale at your school? I think a lot of people probably don't. I mean, he is extremely clownish. His like background, it's kind of crazy how he ends up even being a congressperson. He is like on the stump. They're not sending their best, okay, when it comes to Byron Donalds. There might be some people who don't want to vote for a black person. There might be a couple of those people. There might be a couple. And David Jolly's not trying to get
the panhandle. I think they're going to turn out for Byron Donalds in the panhandle, Tim.
David Jolly's might not, that might not be a core part of the campaign, but those voters might exist. And I think that there's a lot of hurt feelings on the Republican side. My understanding is that Ron DeSantis doesn't really care for Byron Donalds that much. There's the James Fishback Groyper faction aforementioned that doesn't care for Byron Donalds all that much. So I think that it's possible. It wasn't that long ago in 2018 that Andrew Gillum only lost to Ron DeSantis by 15,000 votes or something. Now, a lot of Republicans have moved into Florida since then, particularly in COVID, et cetera. But a decent amount of Republicans have died since then in Florida as well. So, I think that it's possible. And I think there's a bunch of other interesting stuff there. Ron DeSantis did a very weird Let me rephrase. Ron DeSantis did, I think, a very personally strategic gerrymander, and it was not meant to maximize the vote this time. I think he said, yes, sir, Mr. Trump, we're going to gerrymander down here. But it was like a little bit of a 26 dummy mander, because there's a lot of these districts that are like in the R+9, 10, 11 space that are going to be up for grabs this year that won't be in the future. I've talked a lot about my guy, Bale Dalton, out in Daytona Beach, running against Corey Mills. Anna Paulina Luna's seat, they just had a pullout where she's only up 3. There's a seat down in Mar-a-Lago, two seats by Mar-a-Lago, Moskowitz, if he wins the primary against the DSA guy. And then there's a woman, Pia, I'm forgetting her last name, who's running against kind of this motley field of Republicans. They're just a bunch of those seats that like will probably be tough to hold on to in a big presidential year, but that Democrats could win this year. So it's kind of interesting tonight in Florida.
Hmm. Andrew?
Yeah, I am very much in I'll believe it when I see it mode for Florida. I obviously have thought much less deeply about it than Tim has, especially from the perspective of the midterms. I do think if we were to see really even a close race, I mean, it would just be such an exclamation point on a road not taken for the Republican Party over the last few years. I mean, I think like people forget, like coming out of Trump 1.0, it was like, how will Republicans ever put their brand back together? And then it was like, oh, actually all they have to do is look sort of respectable and be halfway competent and run against woke and the excesses of Democrats. And like suburbanites are totally ready to put all that behind them and eat it up with a spoon, right? It's like the Glenn Youngkin thing in Virginia or the Ron DeSantis thing down in Florida, where you're winning by a lot all of a sudden. And instead of, you know, soldiering forward with some version of that, Republican primary voters were like, no, you know what we really want is a return to the absolute dead end of Trumpism, which is like, it just actually has turned out to be the absolute dead end of Trumpism because of how much he has, you know, the wheels have fallen off that project just a wheel and a half in. So who knows what comes next? But I mean, Republicans could be cruising right now if they'd gone a different direction a few years ago.
There, but before the grace of God. All right. We have word that the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, is heading out to Iowa in his personal capacity. Does this motherfucker think he's going to run for president?
Yeah, right, JBL? Don't you think? Why wouldn't
I mean, I hope so. I hope so. Because watching this guy run, owning the Iran war in the Republican primary would be amazing content. No?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, maybe this is a keeping his options open thing. I don't exactly. It's like hard to imagine him like running against JD, but maybe. I don't know. It's a crazy fucking world out there. I mean, imagine the egomania of being this guy, Pete Hegseth. I mean, you were a weekend talk show co-host, allegedly sexually assaulting a lady that was not your wife in like a California resort hotel, having the front desk called on you like while you're hammered, like 3 years ago, like not like 2 minutes ago, you know, like this was your life, like you're cruising around Republican events, getting hammered, getting handsy with the girlies, and then working on the weekends, like that was your life, and now you're the Secretary of Defense all of a sudden and people are fucking saluting you.
You're firing flag officers left and right, telling them to eat your ass. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, your wife is like redecorated the Pentagon and you have Kim Jong-un pictures of yourself and her everywhere. Sure, why not run for president? Who could tell you no? And it's kind of like the Trump thing, but who could tell? After the Access Hollywood tape, literally everybody said to Trump, you had no chance to win, including his own advisors. Like everyone was like, you should quit, this is over, whatever. And he won anyway. And so it's like, that, you know, so then how do you tell that person no again? And that's kind of like Pete Hegseth now. So I think that anything is possible, right?
I'd love to see Hegseth debate Tucker. I'd pay for that, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing about all this is, like, they're still in charge during 2028. Right. So I don't exactly know how it'll be an interesting, we'll make for good content. It'll be an interesting psychological drama because there can't really be a cabinet on cabinet primary. Like one of them would have to quit. I don't think Trump wants Pete.
Why not?
To quit.
Why couldn't they? Why couldn't the Secretary of Defense run an active presidential campaign while serving a SecDef? Where is it written, Tim?
Sure. I don't know. Yeah, I guess.
It is too bad, sort of, that JD got selected as Trump's vice president, because if he were still on the outside, he would be like the chosen boy for the Tucker coalition. He would be running, you know, in 2028. And then you would actually get a beautiful debate if Hegseth were to run as well. Like that, the sad thing about imagining Hegseth running is the likely spectacle that he gets up on a debate stage and nobody there is willing to crucify him over the Iran war or over Signalgate or over any of these things, just because they all have, you know, skin in those games too. But I mean, you can dream. Maybe Thomas Massie will be up there or somebody who can be like, hey, remember all that stuff? Remember all that stuff that you were responsible for? It would be kind of fun to see.
I'm really fascinated. And it is interesting to think about how it's going to play out. Like I'm living one week at a time over here. So sometimes it's hard to kind of let myself kind of imagine. But like in a different world, right? I mean, the vice president doesn't really have a job. And so, you know, like in a normal world, right? And so you have basically this thing where starting, what, like late 2027, the vice president starts running their campaign for president. They have the tacit support of the president. Maybe there's a gadfly opponent. You know, maybe they have a couple debates. But like they're a bit, how is that going to work this time? Like is Trump is... Is Trump going to let JD start running?
No.
Are there going to be other people from the outside that from the little Tucker camp that decide to start running immediately? I don't. The process is a little bit curious.
So I am convinced that the first person into the race on the Republican side will be somebody outside the administration, and it'll be somebody like DeSantis, and because Trump isn't going to allow anybody within. He's going to want to pretend that he's staying on until the last possible minute.
Right.
Right. He cannot allow people within the administration to start talking about life without him, because the minute they do, they're more important than he is. He can't live in that world.
I know.
There is no world in which Donald Trump can be a supporting character.
And he can't help himself, but like, right. by making comments about them. Like even if you're JD, it's like you kind of want to wait as long as possible, right? Because you can't. I mean, JD can't. It's kind of, this torture is fun to think about. Like JD can't run like a campaign that's kind of like, you know, I think Mr. Trump's been really great, best president of all time. I'd probably do things a little differently on foreign policy.
Nope.
Like you can't get away with that.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. I can't.
Did you guys
wait.
See? I just hold on. Saw,
we
got to like,
move on.
Blurb. About
hold on,
this.
Andrew, hold on. We'll come back to that in a minute, but I got to get the last ad in. This show is sponsored by Bowl and Branch. Guys, it's summertime here in the Big Apple for a few more weeks, and we're all trying to use our air conditioner sparingly. When I sleep, my hair gets all matted, and you know what it's like, Tim. Bowl and Branch's summer bedding options are breathable, lightweight, and designed to keep you cool all night long. Got a great waffle blanket from Bowl and Branch that I break out every single night. I have bought other copies of this waffle blanket for some of my children, the ones in the top half of the rankings, anyway. Their sheets are all 100% organic cotton. I got them Bowl and Branch sheets, too, because I love my top half of my favorite children. Woven specially for airflow and not just softness. Unlike synthetic cooling technology or chemically treated fabrics, the cooling in Bowl and Branch is structural. It's literally how the cotton is woven. 94% of Bowl and Branch customers say their sheets get softer with every wash. I say that too, because it's true. They're amazing. You guys know how hard I hype these sheets. You have to try them to believe them. It's hard to get good sleep in the times we live in, and Bowl and Branch can help. Sleep cooler this summer with Bowl and Branch. Get 15% off your first order plus free shipping at bowlandbranch.com/next level with code next level. That's Bowl and Branch, bowlandbranch.com/next level, code next level to unlock 15% off. bowlandbranch.com/next level, code next level, exclusions apply. Andrew, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to jump off of what you guys were saying about how it's the outside fringes that can start talking about it first. I don't know if you guys saw that there's this conference upcoming in early November. It was just announced, the Christ is King America After Trump conference, featuring guys like Alex Jones, Joel Webbin, J.P. Sears, James Fishback, who we were mentioning a minute ago, Dale Partridge. I mean, really, these guys who are on the the still fringe, not the stuff that used to be fringe that has now become, you know, mainstream MAGA under Trump. They are out on the fringe of the currently constituted Republican Party because they're willing to talk about stuff like this, and they're willing to actually start strategizing right out there in the open. Then if you move in a concentric circle,
Where's that conference, Andrew?
Dallas, Texas, if anybody wants to
Dallas seems nice this time of year. I think you should go. Bring the fam. Dallas,
I probably wouldn't bring the fam, but maybe I'll go cover it. Yeah, it seems like a good event. But like, then you have people who are willing to talk about this stuff sort of in coded ways. So like, you have a big fight recently of guys like Rod Dreher and Michael Brendan Doherty over at National Review, who are squabbling over J.D. Vance as like, you know, whether at some undeterminate future date we should or should not consider him, you know, too toxic to run, or is he too close to Tucker, is he too close to the anti-Semites, all this stuff. But then like, you know, the closer you get to Trump and actual power, the less you're allowed to talk about anything forward looking like that at all. You just have to be so happy that it's the golden age of America right now. And so they're going to be behind. They have all the structural advantages of Trump being the kingmaker and all of this stuff, but they really are sort of locked. They're sort of frozen. They're in stasis because you can't talk about these things as long as Trump is still around.
God, it's beautiful. I can't wait.
It's going to be kind of fun.
Yeah. You know what?
I like to find little things, little glimmers of hope.
The only thing. The only thing that keeps me going is spite, Tim.
Their pain.
And the urge to see bad things happen to bad people.
Yeah.
That's all I have in this world.
I got a little bit more than that, but that's a key driver.
All right. Before we get out of here, Andrew, I want to turn the show over to you because there was a piece of Twitter discourse about postpartum depression isn't real. Can you explain to us what is happening?
Yeah,
I don't do the Twitters.
This is such a weird story because I don't know if you guys have been following at all. There's this trial going on. There's the Lindsay Clancy trial. It's this horrible, awful story of a mother who allegedly, you know, murdered her kids while she was suffering from postpartum psychosis. These cases become enormous content. We see more and more a lot of the people who are sort of political slash cultural commentators really love these now because they tend to, you know, break down in really sort of sharp ways among different audiences. They can fight about them. So this has been a thing on right-wing Twitter the last couple of days, couple of weeks of sort of, first of all, poo-pooing the idea that this lady should be able to, you know, launch a criminal defense basically of insanity as she's on trial. And again, this horrible, horrible story. But then, of course, bleeding out into this larger dialogue about postpartum psychosis and postpartum depression. And in the last few days, it has been a lot of these sort of He-Man Woman Haters Clubs type accounts basically saying there's no such thing as postpartum depression. You know, women who claim to be suffering from this basically just need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Matt Walsh is the kind of guy who always lives in this space.
I didn't suffer from postpartum depression, so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe it doesn't exist.
But and he
that's
was not
a joke,
the worst
ladies.
Offender.
That's a joke. People, that's a joke. Sometimes my jokes get me in trouble. Just a joke.
He was not the worst offender of some. I mean, there were some people out there who were just saying like explicitly, you know, women need to suck it up and grow a pair. Basically, it's fine. His thing was a little bit more like, you know, much of what many people would like to attribute to postpartum depression is actually just, you know, selfish people being mad that that they're not at the center of their own lives anymore. And so it kicked up kind of a hullabaloo. This is the sort of thing that you see a lot, again, because of how much this space is now dominated by these sort of infotainment types. And there was also a lot of posting, you know, among the hangdog women of the Republican Party who are like, wow, it really sucks to be a woman online on Twitter right now. I don't know what the deal is with all these, you know, podcast bros who have all these takes.
And
about
so you took the
depression.
Counter take to this. You were on the side that postpartum depression does exist.
That's correct, Tim. Yes. Okay. My
what was the feedback that you got on that?
Say that again.
What was the feedback that you got on that when you engaged in the
Twitter's
Discord?
Weird, man. I don't know. I don't think I like, you know, first of all, I completely missed when I first waded in on this, that people were primarily talking about postpartum depression right now in the context of this trial. So I was not actually really aware that I was stepping into like the hottest button topic on X.com right then. But it was crazy. I mean, I literally just tweeted like, you know, hey, you know, my wife is not a selfish person at all. She was very excited to have kids. She's a very hard worker. She suffered from postpartum depression, especially after our first two kids. And it was hard for her, you know, it hit her like a truck is what I tweeted. And like the deluge of guys, just random guys that I suddenly had in my mentions, like, you're covering up your wife's, you know, psychiatric history. And I bet she's a lunatic. And like, you know, and you're probably not a very good judge of her character. And just like that. I mean, it really is amazing. It's a little bit beside the point, I guess, but just the stuff we subject ourselves to by continuing to live on Elon's website and the ways he's tweaked the algorithm here and there, really astonishing. And I had not really quite grokked just how insane it must be to be a woman on Twitter.com until I happened to mention a woman that I love and am married to and got to experience some of the sort of vicarious blowback against her just because I had like mentioned her. It was very strange.
I'm always fascinated to find out like about new niche viewpoints that I didn't even know about. Just like, wow, there's a whole community of people that think postpartum depression is not real. Just like a full, like, you know, like that's just one subset of the, you know, kind of like right wing guy, dude culture crowd on you know, on the internet. It's interesting to discover new things. And I'm sorry for the women that have to hear from these men or date them or whatever, but it's intriguing. I do have one thing to close with, JVL, unless you had a thought. Please. On postpartum depression. Speaking of depressed women, did you know that Nancy Mace has a new YouTube show?
Oh boy.
It's doing pretty well.
She is a competitor in the YouTube space. Maybe. I bet if MTG won't hang out with you, I bet Nancy will, JVL.
I would be less interested.
I always like to welcome new people into the fold. It's not as easy as it looks here doing content every day. You know, everybody thinks they can have a podcast, but maybe it'll work for Nancy. Her show is called Get Maced. Get Maced.
Okay.
With Nancy Mace. Let's see some of the posts she's done so far. I mean, it's a good volume lately, which is nice. Yesterday she posted, Nancy Mace called a bigot for exposing animal sacrifices.
Okay.
With a picture of like an Islam flag there. So that must be a anti-Islam thing. Today she did a tattoo reveal.
She's doing okay for herself. She's got 37,000 followers on there. Her videos are, you know, picking up mid-5-digit view counts. You know, that's more. The Washington Post tried to relaunch a lot of products recently and never achieved the levels of exposure that Nancy Mace is getting.
Doing better than the Washington Post.
I do think it's funny. Every single one of her videos contains in the title the name Nancy Mace. It's all Nancy Mace breaks the internet. Nancy Mace exposes the epidemic of white liberal women. What Pramila Jayapal said should disqualify her. Nancy Mace exposes the far left. It's like, we get it. It's your channel. You're going to be on it. You're in the thumbnail. You don't need to.
You've
be in
been
the
maced, everything. Andrew.
You know, if there's one thing I have learned in my journey through life, it's that middle-aged adults who suddenly radically change their physical appearance are always doing great. And it's just a sign of their inner peace and the way that they are journeying forward and just settling in and being well-adjusted and healthy. And so congratulations, Nancy.
Actualization.
Yeah.
It's all a journey.
I love this for you. Everybody else, it's been a good show. It's been an okay show, but a long show. We've made up in quality with quantity. We'll see you next week, my friends. Hit like, hit subscribe, get maced. Good luck, America.